Hi, everybody. Welcome to a Postmasters edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balaji. Great to have you here with us. Plenty to talk about in this Postmasters episode. You can get a hold of me on Twitter, at Ryan Balaji, and you can find all of my work at golfnewsnet.com. Download our apps for Roku and Amazon Fire. And you can download the GNN Radio app if you want to listen to our podcasts all in one place, all at one time. We are presented by 2Under. And 2Under are the purveyors of asset management. I got some 2Under underwear in the mail a couple of weeks ago, thanks to Jack Curry and the gang at 2Under. And it's awesome. It's so awesome. It's like wearing nothing, but also simultaneously wearing the underwear that was made for you specifically. It's like a glove. It's amazing. The Joey Pouch protects your no-drip tip, protects your guys, and everything kind of it's important. And it really is great for pretty much any activity, but the swing shift underwear is perfect for golf, even for working out, although they have specific workout underwear. They have daytime-specific underwear. They have nighttime-specific underwear. So if you either got a hot date or you're going to try and get a better night's rest, they've got underwear for that too. Got great loungewear. It's awesome. I love 2Under. Head over to 2Under.com, the number 2UNDR.com. Use the promo code GNN20 and you will save 20% on anything you order, anything and everything that you order. It's a pretty awesome deal. Again, 2Under.com, number 2UNDR.com, and then use that promo code GNN20. Also, I want to tell you, you need to hop on to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. Sign up now to be a part of the Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship. Name's a little bit different this year, but that's what's always been known as the World Am. It's in August. It's in Myrtle Beach. I will be there. Mitch Lawrence will be there. Hopefully you will be there to join us. We're going to play 5 days of golf, 4 days of competitive golf, one fun round. You get a $300 player's gift bag just for showing up with great clothes from the likes of Greg Norman Golf, which I pretty much wear religiously around this house. My wife calls it my uniform because I wear so many of their quarter zips. And you can also get to experience the world's largest 19th hole each and every night. And you can do all of that for less than $550. It's pretty amazing. I mean, the deal that we have. We also have a great package for under $1,200 where you are able to stay at the hotel right next to the convention center where we'll be at each and every night. Easy to get up, easy to get to the 19th hole, easy to get to the golf course every day. Or if you have your own accommodations in mind, you can do that too and just buy the package from us and save a little coin too on that the fee that they charge. Actually save $100 on the actual fee they charge over at the World Am site. So head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam for more information, and you can always reach out to me with questions about the World Am as well. All right, so let's talk Masters. And specifically, I really want to talk about Patrick Reed, not because he won, I mean, that's part of it, but there was so much reaction to a piece Alan Shipnick from golf.com published last night, basically right after the win, about the experience of Patrick Reed's parents and sister in Augusta watching their blood win his first major championship and not be there to celebrate with him. And to me, I mean, it's kind of a heartbreaking piece, but Shipnick talks to Reed's father and mom, and he's been estranged from them 4 years now, and probably going on 5 or 6 years now. And that, at least in Reed's parents' telling of it, stems from their issues with Justine, his wife. Justine is 4 years older than Patrick Reed. They met when he was at Augusta State. She was working in, I believe, nursing, and they got together. She was a high school athlete, so she really bonded with him. In terms of that competitive athletic spirit, and they kind of form this together against the world style team, and his parents didn't seem to like that apparently, and they spoke up about it. However vigorously, we will never know because it's only them talking, and they're only talking to Shipnick and to others, but they're only talking about what they want to say. They're not talking necessarily the truth. And so it's kind of, oh well, how dare Patrick Reed not be there with his parents for the biggest moment of his personal life, of his professional life, becoming a Masters champion. That's amazing. You get to go back there for the rest of your life. You get to be a major champion for the rest of your life. And you know, so in one sense, we've had all these Masters memories over the years of different players winning a major and embracing their family on that 18th green or behind it. For as terribly flawed of an individual Earl Woods was, we didn't really know enough about Earl Woods to put that into context when he embraced Tiger Woods after the 97 Masters or even the 01 Masters. And you didn't know that. You didn't know the kind of somewhat closer to the totality of what Earl Woods did to get Tiger Woods to the point he was and the kind of man Earl Woods was and the kind of dichotomy of raising a champion but also raising a deeply flawed human being. And we go through these other things too with different flawed winners. But then you also have recent champions and you think about Jordan Spieth when he won. I mean, it fits so neatly and perfectly. He comes from a really nice Texas family. His dad runs a business. They're relatively well off. He cares deeply for his sister, who's severely autistic, and Jordan is tremendous with her. And it just makes Jordan Spieth the perfect sports hero because he's squeaky clean and he works so hard and he's so polite and nice and he's got class and grace and he's humble and he takes defeat well and golly gosh, so great. Well, that's not the way sports work. That's not the way life works. And champions are not, they don't get there usually. They do not get there by being the nicest person. They don't get there by being perfect. They get there by being the best at one very specific thing. And they hone their entire energy and being into doing that one thing. And a lot of other things can fall by the wayside as a result of that. You can be in fact, more often than not, our sports heroes are deeply flawed people, just like you and me. We are deeply flawed. And their flaws are different than ours. But for whatever reason, they've been able to channel their incredible talent to do something we find remarkable, or at least some portion of our society finds remarkable. And because they do that, we almost absolve them or expect them to be absolved of all of the other stuff that might not be likable about them. And we build them up because they're winners, winning over everything. And that means we get blinded to these ideas that there can be imperfect champions. There can be people who do extraordinary things that are also maybe not the best people. Or that are also perfect in one thing and deeply flawed in everything else. I mean, think about Tiger Woods. He was an incredible champion. He still is an incredible champion. But his father raised him into a guy who's extremely awkward around kind of different types of people, particularly women. He didn't have a healthy marriage. He behaved poorly as a married man. And then later in life, when he had to learn the hard way about marriage, about being a parent, about drug abuse, he's going through that now. He's going through that kind of purification process of sorts. So you catch people at different stages of their life, at different moments. They may not be the finished product. Patrick Reed's probably not the finished product of who he's going to be. And he's gone through some difficult things in life. I mean, he has done some of these things to himself. If you read Shane Ryan's Slaying the Tiger book, which is a fantastic book, I mean, it's really the definitive profile of Patrick Reed, at least at that point in his life and up to that point in his life, from a few years ago, then you get to know a little bit about Reed's troubling past, that he was originally going to go to Georgia. He didn't fit in very well. Apparently, there were kind of some red flags, but they thought at Georgia they just get him on the team and they can get him to bond and it will work. And he got too drunk one night and got into some legal trouble, and then he was accused of stroke shaving and cheating, and then he was accused of stealing a putter, and his teammates didn't like him, and all of a sudden he's out and went to Augusta State. And again, similar situations come up, accusations of cheating, a deep disdain from his teammates, and he puts it all aside and compartmentalizes it and leads Augusta State to two NCAA championships. Basically, not on his own, but he was unflappable. And so I think all of those things are coming together in this one moment of Reed's moment of glory. And it's not being swept under the rug. It's being swept from out under the rug. And all right, well, yeah, you won, but you stole that putter. You cheated those times. You don't have a good relationship with your parents. Your wife keeps you from your family. Blah, you know, blah, blah, blah. Goes on like that. And the reaction, I think, is it's kind of difficult. I mean, how do you react to something like that? In the biggest moment of someone's life, especially a public figure, you want to understand how they got there. You want to understand what they overcame, who they are, what motivates them, what motivated them that day, what latently got them there to lead to that moment. And all of that stuff, all that unsavory stuff, unseemly stuff, defines Patrick Reed, in a sense. It's not the entire thing. It's not who he entirely is. But it is an influence. And so, you know, a journalist like Alan Shipnuck, who's incredibly talented, very intelligent, really thinks this stuff out, better than anybody in golf, at least, at this genre of writing. He goes places other people can't or won't. And so he basically produces a piece sourced with some anonymous off the record or, you know, unnamed sources, as well Reed's parents. And it kind of reads like if you want to read it a certain way, like a hit job, like, oh, you're hacking down the Masters champion just hours after he won. That's not how Alan wrote it. Alan did one of the second definitive profile of Patrick Reed in 2015. He's not trying to hatchet the guy down. I don't think people understood that, but he's not trying to hatchet the guy down. He's trying to create a profile of a champion to explain more than birdies and bogeys, because that's what makes sports interesting, especially to someone like Alan, who's seen a lot of things. And so you're trying to unravel that onion, understand an athlete, how they got there. This is an important part of it. And a lot of the backlash, I think, against Alan was, well, you didn't, Justine and Patrick Reed didn't speak for this. Well, they did not. And that is their choice. And Alan, I thought rather astutely, went into the news conference with Patrick and asked him a question. Basically, is any part of you sad or disappointed that you can't spend this day, this important moment, with your parents and sister? And Reed kind of blew it off with an answer about just trying to play golf and win golf tournaments. He didn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about it. And that is every bit Patrick Reed's right. He doesn't have to talk about anything to anybody. That is not your obligation as a professional athlete. Your obligation as a professional athlete is to do your job. And if you do your job, and you win golf tournaments, and you play well in them, and you make enough money inside the ropes, or for showing off your talent, then you don't have to show off other parts of yourself. You don't have to reveal other parts of yourself. That's pretty much what Tiger Woods did. And I think you would, if you thought about it long enough, I mean, the guy wears, or tries to wear, a red shirt on Sundays like Tiger. Tiger Woods is Patrick Reed's hero. He wants to be like him. He's not going to win 14 majors, but he wants to carry himself that way. He wants to be that fiery of a competitor. Woods never really revealed anything about himself until it all came out with a 9-iron in the back of an Escalade. He didn't need to. And so Patrick Reed feels probably the same way. What, it worked for Tiger. Why, you know, I've got, if I don't say anything, I'm not cheating on my wife. I'm not doing horrible things. I'm just maybe not as lovable or likable. He seems pretty happy. I mean, all things considered, he's got a child with his wife. He's happily married, it seems like. He's got a major championship. He's won 6 times on the PGA Tour. He is an American team competition stalwart and maybe ironic hero. And that's good enough for him. He doesn't need friends. He doesn't need people to adore him. He's gotten this far without all of that. So why does he need it now? That's probably his entire perspective. And I appreciate it fully. I'm okay with that. I don't think that he has to rebut what his parents and sister, mostly his parents, choose to say in public. And I'm sure his parents are trying to do this in public for selfish reasons. They want to see their son again. They want to see their grandkid. They want to connect with their blood again. But we don't know how it got to that head. We only know kind of sort of their view, Reed's parents' view, of what happened. And all they say is it's basically about his choice, Patrick's choice, to marry Justine. Well, it would seem to me that it's probably more than that. Just a guess, it's probably more than that. You don't go years without speaking to your parents and have them removed from the U.S. Open just because they want to see you without a good reason. There are people have reasons. We don't know them, and we're not going to know them. Patrick Reed's not going to talk about them. Again, he doesn't have to. It's worked for him this far, and I honestly believe him winning the Masters will invite him to double down and be more resolved to carry himself the way he always has. Because it worked. He won. He won the Masters. So being beloved, being open and transparent and all this other stuff, you don't have to be gregarious. None of that. That's not who Patrick Reed is. Patrick Reed figured out in the last few years that he doesn't have to be loved, but people will appreciate him if he does the right things in terms of performance. When he slayed Rory McIlroy at the Ryder Cup, that place could not have been more electric when he had won that match one up. Or when he was draining putts left and right and wagging his finger on behalf of America toward Europe. But it was the same two guys on Sunday in the final pairing at the Masters. And you could tell right away who the patrons wanted to win. Anybody but Patrick. They wanted McIlroy to win because he was closest. And then when Spieth made a charge, they clamored around Spieth. When Fowler was kind of the last-ditch guy to throw a couple of objects, a couple of things into Reed's field of vision, then they rooted for him. And just it didn't stop Patrick Reed. He didn't care. He's been rooted against his entire life. So he was used to that. I honestly think it would have messed him up more had the crowd wanted him to win, had all of a sudden they had pulled for him. And in a sense, it's almost the opposite. It would have been the opposite of the Masters last year. Sergio Garcia talked a few different times, and Justin Rose for that matter, about the sense, the moment that Sergio could sense the patrons wanted him to win. Maybe for the first time, they wanted him to win, not the other guy. Not Justin Rose, not whoever else. They wanted Sergio to win. It changed things. Went from being kind of agitated by fans to, damn, these people want me to do it. And he does it. And Patrick Reed has always kind of dealt with people not wanting him to do well, except in these team competitions where, you know, everyone's going to root for you because you're on the same country. Okay. So I get the sense that had all of a sudden the patrons on the first tee gone, go get him, Patrick, and we're just gonna crush Rory McIlroy like you did at Hazeltine, let's go, without country or continent involved, that might have stifled Reed. I don't think Reed has ever thought of himself as a fan favorite. I don't think he mistakenly believes, just because he's cheered in those American-draped clothes for those matches, that he's beloved. But maybe, and I'm going to get into psychoanalysis here, but he often wears pieces of his Ryder Cup apparel, or has it with him. The pants, sometimes the shirt. He had the Ryder Cup umbrella in the rain. Maybe part of him wants to be loved and liked, and not just respected for his game, which is remarkable, but he wants to be adored and appreciated, and not by his parents, that's a separate thing, but by the average fan. And he knows the average fan associates the time they like him with the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup. That's a bit of psychoanalysis. I have no idea if that's rooted in fact. But when you flash those logos, when you have really no other reason to show them, to wear them or have them around, maybe you're trying to remind people of when they did like you or when they didn't root against you. And maybe we'll see more of that. Maybe we'll see less of that. I wonder what Patrick Reed becomes from here. Again, I said this earlier. The Masters champion is an unfinished product. The guy is a winner at a moment in time. This will continue to further his development of who he becomes as a golfer and how he rounds out the rest of his career. And we often kind of forget that in moments of sports triumph. We think about a singular moment in time, singular achievement. We don't think about all the stuff that goes into it or what that achievement means for the rest of time. I mean, it's the wrinkle in time. Now another wrinkle has been created. Where does Patrick Reed go from here? He could win 5 more majors. He may never win another. In a sense, he strikes me like Raymond Floyd. Incredibly aggressive, brash, a lot of swagger. And people came to like that swagger over time. People love Raymond Floyd. But he wasn't always received that way. And maybe over time, Patrick Reed could develop into that kind of guy. You didn't really like him at first, but you kind of like him over time. I don't know. Maybe not. It seems like from Alan Shipnick's piece that not a lot of his peers know him very well because he chooses to cast himself off by himself except when he needs them for playing the Ryder Cup and President's Cup. So they don't really know him, so they have nothing bad to say about him. At least publicly, at least on the record. And his peers aren't going to all of a sudden change their view of him. They don't have one. I mean, he's a guy who keeps to himself. If he's fine with that, they're fine with that. That's kind of how the tour works. You can have friends or don't. Your choice. But your job is not making friends. Your job is making money, building a resume and a legacy for yourself where you can build money and career and more. Once you're done golf, once you're done playing competitive golf, or go play PGA Tour Champions. Patrick Reed, if there's still a PGA Tour Champions in 25 years, Patrick Reed's going to win everything. Because he's just going to go out there every week and smother everybody who's just having fun, a 54-hole, no-cut, hit and giggle, slapping backs and feeling good about the days of work. Patrick Reed's going to stomp on some Champions Tour throats. I mean, he is going to crush the 50-plus circuit, if it's still around in 25 years. He's just going to do it. I have no doubt in my mind. And that's just the kind of guy that he is. What I find really interesting about the reaction to Reed winning and all that stuff is we normally have treated winning as a redemption. Like, all right, you did all this bad stuff, or you weren't that great, or you weren't a finished product or well-rounded to get here, but now that you're here and you achieved it, all is forgiven. Or you are It was worth it. Your method worked. You're a genius. You're okay. So far, Reed has not really gotten that, I don't think. At least not at large. I mean, I'm sure some pockets of golf and sports feel that way about the guy. But he hasn't gotten that. And I wonder why. I mean, everyone has dirty laundry. Everyone did things in their youth, even in their 20s, that they are not proud of. I could spend an entire podcast telling you stuff I did in college and graduate school and even a little bit after that I'm not proud of. And it has nothing to do with the process. Just me now, almost 35, I would not do it that way again. If I were 35 then. But now, I mean, back then, yeah, sure, of course I would do that. But I didn't know better. I had to learn. I had to fail. That's how I perceive it. And Reed seems to have done some things that probably fit under that bill. And that's okay. It's not, you can learn from that. You can get better from that. I don't see Patrick Reed going around stealing Scotty Cameron's on the PGA Tour. Not a problem. He's good. He seems to have genuinely tried to keep to himself and not upset the apple cart. It's not like people seem to hate playing with Patrick Reed. I mean, you talk about McIlroy and Spieth and other guys, they're like, I love playing with Patrick because he gets so competitive. They like that about him. Maybe not like him personally, but they like that about him. They like that about him, the golfer. So, can we say, okay, well, Patrick Reed is a deeply flawed human being. Yes, we all are. But maybe it's time to look past what happened in college, although it wasn't that long ago, and just signal, okay, you're a guy that's a major champion now. What do you do with that opportunity moving forward? Do you continue to be who you are, and you're okay with that? Do you try to change who you are and try to become more beloved, maybe at your own professional peril? Maybe you lose sight of what got you here. I don't know. That's the fascinating portion of sports, is that singular moments are just that. They're one moment that feeds into the next, but it's all woven together by time and so many other things. And Patrick Reed in 5 years may have 3 more major championships, may have none, may be out of golf. I don't know. Danny Willett might not ever make the Masters cut again. Who knows? But those moments in time eventually get woven together, and in totality, we look at them and see a more clear picture. You see what happens over 20, 30 years. Golf is a really, really long game. And we think about one hole, one shot at a time, but they add up and they create a picture. And you can apply that to all of the guys that were in contention on Sunday. Think about, obviously, we've talked about Reed for about 30 minutes. But think about Spieth. Spieth, a couple of years ago, looked like he was never going to lose in the Masters again. He finished second to Bubba Watson as a 20-year-old. He won a year later. He nearly went wire to wire for 8 consecutive rounds in the Masters before he put 2 in the drink on 12. Next year, he basically had nothing and almost got into contention in the final round, but had nothing early on Sunday. And then on this Sunday, 9 back, thinking, finally, I'm not playing on Sunday with a chance to win. He played himself into a chance to win, building his legend more as a guy who not only played Augusta so well from the front, but that he found a way to get into it from so far behind. And if you didn't like Jordan Spieth already, what he authored on Sunday was incredible, and you like him more. And that is part of the weaving of fabric of time. That's a moment where you go, remember that time Jordan Spieth almost came from 9 back to win the Masters? Add that in. Now he doesn't have to be a front runner to win everything. He knows he can track anybody down. That's a fabric woven in time. In 15 years, we could look at Spieth as maybe having won 7 or 8 or 10 major championships and go, that Sunday was the most important because he knew he didn't have to win from the lead. Maybe. Look at Ricky Fowler. Not too many years ago, he had top 5s in all 4 major championships. He became the 3rd golfer in the history of golf to accomplish that. And he did it with really no chance to win any of them. But that was an important moment for him to go through all of those majors in 2014 and recognize, hey, I can get there. 2015 basically did nothing. 2016, okay. 2017, finally put something together in the last major of the year. He had a chance going into Sunday at the Masters earlier in the year, but at the end of the year at Quail Hollow, he gave himself his best chance to win a major championship. Came up short to Justin Thomas, I get it, but again, a dot in time. Next major championship, he was the guy that gave Patrick Reed the closest run for his money. He didn't wilt, didn't win, but he didn't wilt. And he's building this arc of getting to major championship success. He may get it, he may never get it. But if he gets one, five, somewhere in between, or none, in 10 years we'll look at that and look at those things woven together and see how they maybe influenced one another. That's what golf is. It just, a lot of moments weave together that you don't understand until you look at it all from the end. We're looking at Rory McIlroy right now. He will have gone probably 4 years without winning a major championship, unless he wins one of the Opens in June or July. What changed? He went from nearly marrying Caroline Wozniacki to getting married to Erica Stoll, and he changed facets of his life, moved to America. He runs his own management firm. He's done some other stuff. Maybe he's found that golf isn't the be-all, end-all. And maybe we've created this picture of... I was thinking Saturday night about writing something, and I just figured to save it for this. Thinking about Rory McIlroy as the smartest kid in your high school class. The kid that was so smart, he got bored at school. Like, he would tank tests on purpose. I did this in college. I would tank a class each semester for the first, like, 2 or 3 years. I went 3 years. The first 2 years. So I tanked 4 classes. I just wouldn't go for, like, after the first class. For, like, the first 5 weeks of the semester. It was like, let's see if you can learn it yourself. Take the tests, fail. And then I gave myself a hole to dig out of so I could go ahead and get myself interested. McIlroy strikes me as that kind of guy where he knows he's so good. He almost finds putting trivial. I mean, he's just such a good ball striker. Putting's dumb. That's the dumbest skill. Almost like Hogan. Like, can't we eliminate putting? That's stupid. That's what Rory is. He gets bored from time to time because he's got other interests. He's a human being. He's more well-rounded. This wasn't his life's obsession. I mean, he's really good at it, but he's got other stuff going on. And so he wants to just be a full-fledged human being. And sometimes golf captures his attention and says, all right, well, I guess let's do this today. I'm in for today. I'm in for these 4 days. And at some point, something might happen to kind of knock him off of that. And for me, on Sunday, I believe that moment was when he didn't make the 4-foot eagle putt on number 2. Shoulder slouched, body language changed, it was over. And Patrick Reed probably knew it, or at least started to sense it, just hadn't done anything about it. But it was over. And his putter went cold. McIlroy knew it was cold. And by then, he was just nonchalant by the time he got to the back, the second nine. It's who he is. And so, McIlroy, when he won 2 majors in a row, that was easy to be motivated. I just won that one. Let's go win another one. Well, now it's been 4 years. How do you get motivated again? You get motivated by not having won. You get motivated by something else? I don't know. I mean, I feel like you have to be driven to be great. You can't just be great. You have to have a compelling reason. And whatever that is, I mean, Patrick Reed is sticking it to everybody. He's self-driven and wants to be the best in the world. If you get in his way, he will flatten you with a semi. And so that's how he approaches the problem. You know, Spieth, he just loves, he loves the Masters. He loves competing. He loves playing golf. So I feel like he's got this sense of trying to achieve greatness. It's kind of like Patrick Reed. They're motivated in a similar way, and so I feel like maybe that's why they get along together in the Ryder Cup in these President's Cup matches. They see the world the same way. They see golf the same way. So that's what drives them. So that's why they're great together. They're different, but they're great together. Peanut butter and jelly. But McIlroy seems selectively motivated. And that's okay. Not everyone is constantly driven. So you have to find the spark. You have to find the thing that keeps you engaged for all 72, and maybe more than that if you need it, to get the job done. Now, almost 4 years away from having that feeling, what will be the spark? Don't know. Ricky Fowler's got plenty of spark, but he's kind of like, I feel like he's kind of like more like McIlroy, where he's not motivated solely by being great. I mean, he's a fairly well-rounded human being, seems to have a lot of friends. He makes friends with anybody. He's a genuine, nice human being, keeps not to himself. He's the face of a sport. He seems pretty happy living a good life. But he doesn't have to live on the edges of success to feel like it's, you know, things are going okay. I mean, he made $1 million on Sunday. He was happy to have pipped Spieth for second place because he beat Spieth. Got that motivator. He wanted the trophy, but he didn't get it. He's still pretty good. Made $1 million. He's got a great girlfriend in Allison Stokey. I mean, I don't know her, but he seems very happy. He's playing golf around the world. He makes millions of bucks. Kids love him. Gets to ride dirt bikes. That sounds pretty good to me. I mean, and I'm sure that it bothers him that he gets criticized at times for not doing more, not winning more frequently. But at the end of the day, he's got at least two commas in his bank account. He's got a great house, great life, great friends, great family, great. So, okay. What's his motivation? Well, he's been close. So I think he's kind of like McIlroy. He's got it. He can taste it now. He knows what it's going to take, and he wants that checked off the list. I think he's got a major this year. Rahm? I think Rahm is probably somewhere in between the Reed Spieth model and the McIlroy Fowler model. And that will be interesting to see because he's an emotional guy. I don't believe he is an accomplishment-driven guy. I believe he lives by the high. He lives for that moment. And he just can't. And when he gets off of it, he's upset that he didn't do it. So he's going to have to figure out how to accept himself for who he is. And that is a guy who will make mistakes. But if you play a tighter game, you can win. But you kind of salvage some of yourself in the process. And I think Rahm wants to try to do it for a while, trying to be who he is. And that means the occasional club slam, expletive, blah, blah. And if he finds that doesn't work, again, fabric in time, he'll change. He'll try it a different way. Kind of like Phil. Golf is really cool in that you can draw so many parallels, I think, between players. I mean, every person is unique. But you've seen enough golfers over time to kind of know the archetype of the best golfers, the best type of players that there are, and how they're motivated and how they get to where they're going to go. And now we're starting to see where Patrick Reed's going to go. I don't know where the rest of the year is going to go in terms of the majors, but between Spieth and Fowler and Patrick Reed, the damn entertaining Sunday. And we didn't even talk in this podcast about the paths for Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, Hideki Matsuyama, go down the line of young guys and old guys that have captivated our attention. I haven't even talked about what those weaves, those stitches in time for them. So we've got a lot going on this year. And we kind of have some time to decompress. We have Heritage this week at Hilton Head. Harbortown's awesome. Watch it if you get a chance. Just remember that usually someone who played the week prior wins at Harbortown, so keep that in mind. And then we're not too far away from the Players' Championship, and we're not too far away from the U.S. Open. A couple months away, going to Shinny. It's going to be pretty awesome. So we got a great year ahead, just getting started. Thanks so much for your support. I mean, it really does mean a ton to me. This was our best week ever. I mean, it's not even close. It was like 150 or 200% better than the next best week. And it really means a lot to me personally. And we probably left a few things on the table in terms of audience, but and that's not everything. It's having an audience that actually likes and cares about what we do, not just ambivalence and acceptance. So thank you. It really means a lot. I hope you enjoyed the Masters as much as I did. Every year, I kind of ease into the Masters and kind of stay away from all the coverage on Tuesday and Wednesday, watch a little par three, get into it for the final days, you know, the actual championship days. And it always delivers. I hope it did for you. I hope you enjoyed it. What a cool thing to have every April. So hopefully you enjoy that. Next year, my daughter turns 3 right around Masters week. That's going to be pretty cool. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Please head over to thegolfnewsnet.com. Check out the latest in the world of golf when you get a chance. Join GNM Plus. We just started a new members-only board. I know I talked a couple weeks ago about doing a board for everybody. Some security issues have kind of not made that possible. So it has to be for members. But for $10 a year, you get an ad-free experience, member board, member discounts, a $10 gift card to our store. I mean, you literally get back 4 to 5 times what you put into it for $10 a year. So head over to thegolfnewsnet.com and sign up now for GNM Plus. Until next time, I'm Ryan Balaji. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.